Do we have a topic tonight?
Porn, yeah. And porn. Listen, Prevenz and I and Buck can go on and on and on about porn. So we don't need other topics. Hello and welcome to the award-winning Ardent Atheist official podcast of the United Church of Bacon, where reason reigns supreme, not frogs and fish. Today's episode brought to you by billions of years of evolution. Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hi, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the inner tubes, and from our other hit podcast, Skeptically Yours. You can find links to our guests' websites, join our Twitter and Facebook feeds, subscribe to our premium ad-free 90-minute full-length episodes, and our email at ardentatheist.com.
If you'd like to take part in the live chat moderated by Joe Swam, go to ardentatheist.com/live and chat us up right now. There's my mic. I love it.
There you are. I got it. And please go to iTunes. Subscribe to our podcast for free. Write a review. Help us get up there in the top 10 where you've never put us. You may also go to ardentatheist.com/premium and subscribe to our premium ad-free content for a measly $10 per year.
Don't subscribe.
No?
Wait till we can get back to doing our show consistently.
Yeah. You are in film school and working full time.
And you are swamped with 2 film projects.
Yeah, we'll eventually get back into the swing of things, but for now...
we will do a show whenever we can.
Yeah. Thanks for understanding.
Yeah, thanks for hanging in there for us. We only have 2 rules. Rule number 1, guests may plug anything they want. We're not hypocrites. Go subscribe. Oh, wait. Don't subscribe.
Yeah, you just said nothing. And rule number 2, if your listener has ever been offended by anything, get a sledgehammer and destroy your computer now. This show has no restrictions on language or content. Love it. And certainly has nothing for you, you porn-fearing, sexually oppressed prude. We're coming to you live from E&H Studios in sunny Studio City, California. In the Studio City tonight, we have Buck Bowen, Dr. Marty Klein, and Paul Prevenza. You know these guys from showbiz.
In the world of psychoanalytical, analytical sciences.
Yeah, psychoanalytical sciences. She's been working hard all day.
Oh, my God.
Really hard work. Tired. Really hard. She, as you know, Prevenz actually performed in her student film that we shot today.
Yeah.
Buck Bowen helped like a madman and did
the
lighting.
Negotiations went on for weeks. My agent said Heather was very tough.
Yeah. You'll get a check very soon. Eventually, not. So, pan scale, 1 scale, fish scale. And Marty, it's been way too long.
Hi, good to be here.
You sound really happy about it.
Hey, good to be here.
Yeah, there you go. thank you so much for coming back and doing the show. You have a new book out?
I do.
I'm really excited about this book. We have a problem right now.
Oh?
A major fucking problem.
Oh?
Yeah, the religious right has decided to continually wage war on porn. But it's different now. It's a different fight now, isn't it?
Well, we have a new candidate for attorney general, and he is going to pursue the war on porn by pursuing the war on trafficking. Trafficking is going to be the back door. You should pardon the expression. Trafficking is going to be the back door through which the war on porn is going to be prosecuted.
Really?
Yeah. Because who's going to say that they're in favor of trafficking, right? So all you have to do is find something that everybody says they're against and say that's involved with porn, and bingo, you got a war on porn. Mm.
Unbelievable.
And what is the truth of that situation? There are several schools of thought on this, and you don't know who to believe.
About trafficking?
Yeah. Some people say that it's not really the thing that everybody's hysterical about, that it exists, but it's not as pervasive and
well, there's a lot of trafficking in Asia, and there's very little trafficking in the United States. And the trafficking that does go on in the United States is mostly labor trafficking, not sex trafficking.
Really?
Yeah.
How are they calling labor trafficking sex trafficking?
Well, if you manipulate people into coming to the U.S. supposedly for jobs, and you take away their passport and they have no car, and they have to sleep where you put them, mm-hmm. that's trafficking.
I see.
And so then you can get those people to work 14-hour shifts in restaurants and withhold their wages, and it's a horrible thing.
Right.
That's trafficking.
Okay.
Now those people, for the most part, are not involved in prostitution or anything, or certainly not in porn. They're mostly involved in labor trafficking. So labor trafficking and sex trafficking are getting lumped into the same thing, trafficking, human trafficking, the trafficking in human beings. And we all agree that that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
But sex trafficking itself, very, very, very rare in the United States. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that there's zero of it.
Right.
But the vast majority of what little human trafficking there is in the United States is for illegal labor, not for illegal sex.
I'll be damned.
And by the way, people say to me, well, you know, isn't it true that all these porn actresses are trafficked in? You know, the porn producers, they have young women lined up around the block begging to get into the industry. They don't have to traffic anybody.
Right. Right. I've dated one. She
a
passed
producer?
Away from... No, I dated a porn star, Holly Stevens, and she passed away from breast cancer. She loved her job. She had no... She wasn't coerced into doing that job.
Actually, for her, a little bit of it was political.
What do you mean?
Like, she was very conscious of, the, you know,
oh, yeah,
I want to live my life this way. Who is anybody to tell me that it's immoral or unethical?
That's correct.
Or illegal or anything?
Yeah.
So, yeah, some people are very champion. I mean, she was feminist.
Yeah.
She was one of these sex-positive feminists.
She was.
Along with Nina Hartley and along with Casper right. Royale mm-hmm. and what, Veronica Vera, lots of people.
Who's your favorite, Buck?
Tracy Lords.
lower your chair.
Yeah,
classic.
Lower your chair so you can actually speak into the mic.
That's right. That's my generation.
Yeah.
Oh
no.
Yeah.
This is what I.
He's a throwback, man.
Yeah.
But so you've sought out old illegal Tracy Lords because she was a minor at the time.
Yeah, they kind of came to. What am I doing?
You're not speaking into the microphone.
You want me to go further back or
no? Come on. Yes, like that.
That's right. Just like Tracy.
Giving it a blowjob.
Like Tracy would do it.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, take it all.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, she came to me.
She did?
Yeah.
How'd she get to you? Like through a web browser?
VHS.
VHS.
Oh, yeah.
So,
man.
There's some childhood
man.
Memories involved, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole generation who don't even know that porn was ever on VHS.
Yeah, and there's a whole generation that doesn't know that porn is responsible for VHS winning the war over beta.
That's right.
Yeah, is that true?
Right,
yes,
yeah.
It's absolutely true.
Tell that story, you guys.
I just
I don't know
that in film school, actually.
Well, please do.
Did you?
I did just
cool.
learn that.
It's part of this sort of general phenomena that technology actually moves forward through vice. Vice is the first thing through which most technology becomes embraced.
Okay.
And they sort of target the end user.
right.
And then it spreads from there, correct?
Absolutely. Although I put it slightly differently, but the same idea, which is that all new technologies are applied to sexual uses as quickly as possible. And in fact, if you want your new technology to survive, it really helps if there's a sexual use of it. So the vulcanization of rubber and electrification of downtowns, cars.
Robots,
right. So
virtual
VR, yeah. I mean,
that's the first thing. When someone put one of those VR kits on my head.
The first thing you think of.
I was like,
first thing you think
what,
of.
What do you have to look at? And my friend was like, well, I have this, and then there's porn. And I'm like, boom, we're there. Show me the porn.
As soon as you look at it, the first thing you think is, oh, this will be great for porn.
Yeah. Yeah, he had it, right? He had it queued up and ready to go.
It's ironic that most people who are going to use VR for non-porn uses eventually are going to be unaware that it's porn money that's driving the development of this new technology.
I see.
Which was true for VHS.
Hmm. Oh, so the VHS beta thing. Right. There were these two competing media, VHS and beta, and... the people behind VHS realized that if you could have a medium that had could pack enough minutes into it to have an actual porn film, that would be the one that would survive.
I see.
Beta was also more expensive than VHS.
Not significantly.
That
not
wasn't
enough.
The thing that made the difference.
Yeah, not enough for that to make a difference. Yeah, because the quality was so much better.
Is that what they taught you in school?
Yeah, the quality was better, but it was more expensive, and VHS was cheaper.
Not that much more expensive.
Okay.
It probably would have balanced out eventually had it taken off. Had beta taken off, supply and demand would have driven the price down.
What drove the demand for videotapes, you know, there was this VHS industry popped up all over the place, and people were taping and time-shifting stuff, but... nobody had put out any titles on VHS yet. So that also coincides with the explosion of the indie film scene because all of a sudden there was shelf space in every rental shop and any place you could buy.
What's a rental shop?
Yeah, right. I found my Blockbuster card.
Maybe it was Blu-ray. Blu-ray. What was the other?
Laserdisc.
Laserdisc. That's what it was.
Jake Johansson got sucked in by Laserdisc and had a whole bunch of movies on those big albums. It's hilarious.
Laserdisc lost because it was too expensive.
Oh, I see.
Laserdisc was my nickname in high school.
Laserdisc is my safe word.
Does everyone have a porn name? Everyone should have a porn name, I think.
Yeah.
Do you have one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mine's Paul Provenza.
Oh, nice. I think that's taken.
Yeah.
No, what's, I would never go by that name.
No. What's yours? Buck?
Buster Monroe.
Buster Monroe?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Buster.
Buster.
Monroe.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
What do you mean?
I get the Buster.
Gary. It's your name of your first dog in the street you grew up on.
Oh, is that what you did?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
what else
Gary
did you do?
Shapiro I had did. The best porn star name ever.
What?
Bender Dick Cumminer Snatch.
That's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
I love
Gary
it.
Shapiro is hilarious.
I have two porn names technically, both of them used in porns. One is an editor, and the other one was given to me in the same way that yours was, Buck. Mm-hmm. I did one of those man off the street porn things and right here in the living room. And walking back, he's like, well, what's your porn name going to be? So it was Flowers Montana. Yeah. My dog in my street I grew up.
I like my porn name, then. It's Puff Berkeley.
Oh, that's nice.
That's odd.
I like that. Yeah, so when I started editing porn, and I did a couple, Ben Gillette had a great porn name, and he gave it to me to use for this, and that was Edgar Allan Poe.
Right, remember that?
Yeah,
You know, since we're talking about history lessons, there's a history lesson in my new book that I want to share with everybody.
All right, let's talk about the new book.
And that is His Porn, Her Pain, Confronting America's Porn Panic.
God, he's good. Did you see him do that? It was almost seamless. It's like you would never have noticed that he just shifted it right to...
Segue.
Until you
it was
pointed
genius.
It out.
I know.
Thank you.
But I just want everybody to appreciate more that than anything you're going
to
say.
That reminds me of a story that has nothing to do with the book, but we're going
we'll
to have
to
skip that,
that
for now.
Yeah.
Well done.
So there's a history lesson. There's a history lesson in the book, which is that back in the old days, the critique of pornography, you know, there have been people against pornography forever, right?
Right.
And the critique was always that it was sinful. And it was tied up with masturbation, right? And masturbation was considered to be sinful. Yeah. Not so much anymore, but it was considered to be sinful. So back in the day, for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years, people were against pornography because it was sinful. It was immoral, and it was bad for the user. Well, round about the time of the 70s and 80s, that idea, when masturbation was no longer considered sinful or immoral, where was the porn critique going to go? The porn critique, the anti-porn critique, evolved into not that it's immoral, but rather that it's dangerous. It's a public health issue. And therefore, it's not just dangerous for the user. It's dangerous for the user's family, dangerous for the user's marriage, dangerous for the user's community, dangerous for all women. And the important thing about that shift in the narrative from it's bad for the user to it's bad for everybody, it's that every activist can come in now with a legitimate negative opinion about pornography. So the anti-trafficking people, they get to have an opinion about porn. The anti-domestic violence people, they get to have an opinion about porn. The anti-sex work people, they get to have an opinion about porn. The new porn addiction industry, they get to have an opinion about porn. So now we have all these new stakeholders. We have all these new activists who claim a legitimate right to criticize pornography. And so that accounts for this explosion of concern about how it's dangerous. Not that it's immoral, but that it's dangerous.
Is it still the religions that are driving it?
No, that's my point.
Okay.
It used to be...
It slipped out of the religious hands, and
exactly.
Now it's just in the zeitgeist. It's everywhere.
Yes.
But is that related to the religious origins of this? Because in that... You have people in positions making public policy that are responding to a constituency that actually really truly is coming from a religious perspective.
No, Paul. I mean, here's a perfect example. There are a lot of people who their primary identification is as feminists,
right.
So they're not religious. And in fact, a lot of them are very secular feminists. Mm-hmm. But they feel that as feminists, they have the obligation to oppose porn. Mm-hmm. Or people who are against domestic violence. a lot of very progressive people against domestic violence. It's not coming from a religion.
Porn has prevented a lot of beatings. Well, I mean, seriously, if you really think about it.
I think, well, there's kind of a, it's a two-way street there.
No.
Yeah. Here's a question. I've heard over and over again, but I don't know how to check this or find out if it's true, that in societies where porn is readily available, rape is down. Is there a correlation there?
There is a way to check that, and the science is very clear.
Okay.
It's a little more complex than you summarized it. Yeah. But the fact is, let's start here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
16 years ago, broadband brought 24/7 porn into everyone's home in America. And the question is, what happened during those 16 years?
Right.
During the 16 years that porn flooded America's homes, the rate of sexual violence went down. The rate of child molestation went down. The rate of divorce went down. There's a lot of social pathologies that went down. Now, we're too scientifically oriented to say that proves that porn reduces rape.
Right.
However, what we can observe is that for anyone who says all this porn is causing an increase in rape, well, according to the FBI, they're wrong. According to the Centers for Disease Control, they're wrong. And in terms of child molestation, according to the Center for the Reduction of Sexual Violence Against Children at the University of New Hampshire, they're wrong.
Well, so the child molestation has gone down, but the child porn has gone up.
The rate of child molestation has gone down, and we're talking about adult porn here. This is not a conversation about child porn. We're talking about adult porn, porn that's made for adults, porn featuring people who are over 18. There's been a huge explosion of that in America's homes and families. And at the very same time, there's been a dramatic decline in the amount of sexual violence in the United States. Now, your question, Emery, is that true anywhere other than the United States?
That's right.
And the answer is yes. It's true in the Czech Republic, in Japan, in Denmark, in Hong Kong, in Croatia. And some of these countries are very different from the United States.
Right. Is the opposite true in other parts?
That's exactly right. Is the inverse true? In other words, are there places
where
rates restrict porn and then rape and sexual violence going up?
Well, we're going to find out one answer to that, because in the United Kingdom, they're passing stricter and stricter laws. You can't have any porn that shows BDSM. You can't have any porn that features golden showers.
Right.
You can't have any porn that some censorship board feels is exploitative of women. Well, good luck with that.
Right.
So we're going to find out. Now, of course, these days in the UK, well, people will just be importing American porn or Japanese
porn.
Right,
right.
We don't have real good natural experiments of cultures these days that are tightening up on restrictions around porn.
But have you seen the statistic where... same thing. Porn has flooded the market, but the rates haven't gone down. Even though we know there's no correlation, I'm just curious if it's a sort of
no.
There hasn't been
an example of that.
Uh-huh. Is anybody really importing Japanese porn?
Well, Americans do.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it's imported. I mean, you don't go down to the docks to get it.
Yeah. You don't have to get a shipping invoice.
I hate it, man. I mean, I'll never forget, we're cutting the Aristocrats, and Eddie Ift gives us a video we have to watch, brings it over, opens up his computer, starts playing this porn. It's a woman who is having someone put little eels about as long as your finger into her vagina and ass. In her ass.
From a bucket through a funnel.
Through a funnel. Pouring them into her
ass. Vagina.
No, into her ass, because they blurred her vagina and they were going into her ass.
Oh, that's true.
Well, you're damn right.
In both, actually.
Hopefully,
now that
she doesn't
it.
Take them from her ass and put them in her vagina, because that would not be hygienic.
Yes.
Right.
Here's the thing.
Provenza and I have learned that the hard way.
I love the fact that Japanese porn is so interesting to me, because it's like, if you want to see odd sea creatures.
Tentacles.
Yeah, but you don't want to see...
A vagina.
You can't see pubic hair in Japanese porn. It's pixelated. Yeah.
They blur the hole, too, the opening.
Yeah, they blur
the lips,
the whole thing.
The
it's
clit.
Not just the pubic hair.
Yeah. It's really, really a bummer. I cannot get off.
That's what I'm saying. Who's importing that?
People who get off on pixelation. I think.
People who have stigmatism.
Stigmatism.
Yeah, who was it used to do that joke about always jacking off to hotel porn but never paying for it?
Yes.
And just every time he's about to come, it goes into that weird, what do you call it?
Striped up and pixelated where you can't see it.
And it was, as a result, I now just jerk off to Picasso.
You're listening to Ardent Atheist at ardentatheist.com and available at the iTunes Store. More after this unavoidable mumbly interruption.
We've had a lot of people ask us about the comedy sketch clips that we play from the Vile comedy album, Chaos Radio, so we are making it available to you. You can buy your favorite tracks from the 23-track record individually for $1, or you can buy the entire recording for $18. Go to gumroad.com/EmeryEmery. That's G-U-M as in mutual masturbation. ROAD.com/EmeryEmery and buy the damn thing.
How many porn stars does it take to screw in a light bulb?
How many?
Just two. Very tiny. Two very tiny porn stars. What?
Foundation Beyond Belief is a community of compassionate humanists and atheists supporting outstanding charities worldwide. Members sign up for automatic donations starting at $5 a month, then distribute those funds however they wish among the featured charities. To date, this unique humanist organization has raised over $750,000 to make this world a better, more humane place. We don't look to the skies for a better world. Foundation Beyond Belief is humanity at work. Learn more or join us at foundationbeyondbelief.org.
Hi, I'm David Diskin, and I wanted to tell you about Camp Quest West. We're a secular summer camp for non-religious families, and our week-long program for kids runs this summer in locations in California and over a dozen others throughout the U.S. At Camp Quest, we give kids the traditional camp experience like archery, swimming, arts and crafts, and campfire songs. But we add science, skepticism, humanism, and critical thinking. There's a few spots left for parents who want to register their kids, but we're also asking for your help. We turn every donation into camperships for families that can't afford to send their children to camp. We're 100% volunteer-based, a tax-exempt 501c3, and our amazing financial aid program is supported by the free thought and skeptic community by people like you. I want to see how much Emery and Heather's fans can raise for Camp Quest West. Visit tinyurl.com/ardentcampquest or look for the link on their Facebook page. You can learn more about our California camps and the others throughout the U.S. by visiting campquest.org.
And now back to Ardent Atheist nonsense you can believe in. We're talking with Buck Bowen, Dr. Marty Klein, and Paul Prevenza.
Paul Prevenza.
Thanks for being here, everybody.
Paul Prevenza's like, I texted you, Marty. I texted you. And he's like, how about a phone call? And Paul's like, no.
Is that right?
Phone call.
You don't do the
what
texting?
What is this phone call of which you speak?
The phone.
Are we not living in the future?
I prefer the
of
phone.
Text?
My email's broken right now.
I don't know what I'm living in.
Half the emails I send out do not make it to their designated place.
I've been having a lot of that happen too. You on Gmail?
No. My apparently, at one point a few months back, somebody started using my emeryemery.com to start spamming people. So I ended up getting blocked at certain junctions in the internet world. And so some of my mails just don't make it through, and I've fixed it once, and I've fixed it a second time, and now I have to fix it a third time, but I didn't know it was happening until I was not talking to
just
you when I was
trying
to, Marty.
Just think of all the porn you're not getting.
Yeah, I'm not getting.
All the Viagra ads.
All the Viagra you're not having.
I've cut all those off. I'm not going to tell this story. It's boring. Anyway, I'll tell you later.
Good choice.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We were talking about, you know, porn and
porn,
stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to go off to the side about and talk a little bit about kids. Did you see the article about Canada, the 386 kids rescued in child porn bust in Canada recently?
386? How do you wrangle that many fucking kids?
Canadians are easy, very easy.
Are they easy?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about kids using adult porn rather than kiddie porn.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds good.
Because what a lot of people are concerned about is that 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds are looking at adult porn.
And want to be porn stars?
And, well, they think what they're looking at is real sex, and their parents are concerned. And I totally agree with parents who are concerned about that. Because anybody who's looking at porn and thinking that that's what real life is like is going to have a
they're
big
in
problem.
For a big disappointment.
Yeah,
but we all did that. We all did that.
And look what happened to
some.
I'm perverted. I get it.
I don't know. To me, it really was always like I didn't go to like a cop movie and think, oh, that's what being a cop is really like. Like I knew being a cop was a lot of paperwork and sitting around in the thing and a lot of bullshit.
How did you know that?
His parents told him when he was a young kid.
12-year-olds don't know that being a cop involves a lot of paperwork unless their parents talk to them about being a cop, or unless they have an uncle who's a cop.
Well, I did have an uncle who's a cop, but that was really just a bad example. Astronaut. I wanted to be an astronaut, but I knew that being an astronaut didn't involve going to the moon. It involved years of, you know, training and school.
It does involve around the world.
How do you not know that?
No.
Are people so susceptible to...
I was. I made a mistake.
That all reason and logic goes out the window?
Not people. 12-year-olds. I mean, you yourself, when I said to you,
I was a smart 12-year-old.
No. The way that 12-year-olds know...
No, don't be ridiculous.
The way that 12-year-olds know what being a dentist is all about is if somebody talks to them about being a dentist and says, you know, it's not just putting your hands in somebody's mouth. If it were, Paul would be a dentist.
They'd be in porn.
So the problem with sex is that because parents don't talk to kids about sex, kids have no way of knowing when they look at porn that that's not what real sex is like.
Necessarily. I mean, some of it is really informative, and some of it is really uninformative.
But the problem is, how do you know which is which?
Yeah, well, that's how I ended up in a hospital trying to figure out why we went from vag to ass and having a doc say, you can't do that. I mean, that happened to me and a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. And it turns out it wasn't even a real doctor. Anyway, I wonder if it has to do with the fact that my introduction to porn was in the 70s, where when you went to see a porn movie, it was like a movie. It wasn't just clips of people.
Well, 12-year-olds don't look at that anymore.
No, I'm saying, I wonder if maybe. My perception on that was, maybe. It was so obvious.
Well, how long, Paul, did you think that the clitoris was in the throat?
I never fell for that one.
Okay.
So what I'm telling parents is that they have to sit their kids down and talk to them about porn. However, no parent in their right mind wants to talk to their kids about porn.
It's not going
to
happen.
So parents need to talk to their kids about sex first.
Right.
Because you don't want the first conversation you have with your kids about sex to be about porn. Or, I mean, that's just too much.
Or to be about their pregnancy.
So what I'm telling parents is you got to talk to your kids about sex so that you can then talk to them about porn. Right. And here's what you tell your kids about porn. Number one, that porn features unusual bodies in unusual situations doing unusual things.
Yeah.
And that porn is not a documentary.
Right.
So I'm trying to encourage parents to instill porn literacy, a version of media literacy, for parents to instill porn literacy in their kids. So the kids understand that they're looking at a consumer product that's not made for them, that has certain conventions to it, and that it is not representative of what they themselves are going to experience in their own lives.
Yeah, you sound pro-porn. Is that true?
I'm not pro-porn. I'm pro let's be thoughtful about this. I'm not anti-porn either.
Right.
Some people say that just because I'm not anti-porn, some people say that just because I use science to evaluate what are the actual impacts of people using porn, then I must be pro-porn. That's just a lazy way of thinking.
Right.
I'm in favor of people having healthy ideas about sexuality and making healthy choices about sexuality. If somebody says, I don't use porn, I say, oh, gee, that's a big mistake. No, I don't say that.
Yeah.
You referred to the sex addiction industry.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Well, back in the 1980s, Patrick Carnes, who was a prison addictionologist, had never taken a sex course in his life, according to him, not me. Patrick Carnes wrote a book and invented the term sex addiction and invented the field of sex addiction. I was the first writer in the United States to say, uh-oh, this is going to be a problem. I wrote about it in Playboy.
When was this?
1986.
Okay.
So we had...
Is sex addiction just bullshit?
Yes, of course.
That's what I think.
Of course.
All right.
Of course. All right. You know, if you want to know about real addiction, you know, watch somebody who is in the process of detoxing from heroin or OxyContin. They shake, they hallucinate, they throw up.
I throw up when I don't have sex for a couple hours.
Right. No. So if you...
But when he doesn't have sex, other people throw up.
Other people throw up. Now, let's see. What was I talking about? So porn addiction came around in the 90s as just an add-on to the whole sex addiction model. With the new twist now of this voodoo neuroscience that supposedly shows that pornography affects your brain in ways that other consumer products don't. And that's nonsense.
It is nonsense.
Here's what they say. They say, neuroscience confirms that when you look at porn, your brain lights up. And not only does your brain light up, the same part of the brain lights up that lights up when you use heroin. Therefore, porn is addictive.
They've been making that brain light up argument. They're full of shit. It doesn't mean anything.
Because it's the same part of your brain that lights up when you cuddle your grandchildren or look at a sunset.
Or believe you have a religious experience.
Yeah. Or believe you have a religious experience. Yeah. So the neuroscience
The pleasure center.
It's the pleasure center. I worry about people. When someone says, if someone were to say to me, I look at porn and my brain doesn't light up, that's the guy that I worry about. Like, why are you wasting your time? Is it because you like the music or what?
Right. Who are the stakeholders in this movement, the anti-porn movement?
Well, like I said, it's the anti-trafficking people. They are the next big thing. And as I said, our new attorney general-to-be, Jeff Sessions, he's a very big anti-trafficking guy. He's also a very big anti-porn guy, by the way. He was... So he's
watching a lot of porn then. I'm pretty sure of it.
Well, the Utah legislature, as I report in my book, His Porn, Her Pain, the Utah legislature recently passed a resolution saying that porn was a public health crisis. And I guess in some ways they got it right, because Utah has the highest per capita consumption of porn in the United States.
Did you read that about during the Republican convention?
Right.
The porn searches from that part of the country?
That's true every 4 years.
Is it?
Every 4 years. Wherever there's the Republican National Convention, the searches for porn terms goes up.
But that's so great.
But the truth is, the search for porn terms is just so huge. I mean, we all know that some 20% of internet traffic around the globe is specifically people looking at porn. And it's interesting, because a lot of activists, they look at that and they say, see, isn't that a horrible thing? And maybe it's a horrible thing, maybe not, but it is a thing. And we need to wonder, what exactly do 1.5 billion people think is worth looking at? Or what is it that 1.5 billion people want every single week?
Rubbing it out.
Well, so...
That's the answer to the question. I can tell you now.
Well, if that's the answer to the question, then that would tell us a lot about human beings.
Yeah.
And that would tell us a lot about how we want to think about what do people need sexually and what do people need in terms of their relationships.
Yeah.
And we would also, if we turn the question inside out, what's going on when you try and criminalize or you try and marginalize the recreation of 1.5 billion people? That would create quite a mess, wouldn't it?
Well, blue balls. It's going to create blue balls. I mean, couples use it.
Many couples.
Many of the relationships I've been in and am in, we will use porn during sex.
There are some women who do find stimulus in porn, and then there are some women who are just completely
bothered by it.
Yeah. And then it's a significant number of people who aren't fazed by it one way or another. Whereas I don't think that's true for men. I think all men respond at some point or another.
Yeah, nearly all.
About 85% of men respond to porn.
Uh-huh.
And, eventually, with women, there's sort of a three-way breakdown. There are some women who like porn, some women who are indifferent to it, and then there's some women who think it's the most disgusting thing in the history of the world.
Hmm.
On the other hand, if you look at 50 Shades of Grey, the book that sold more copies today than my book about pornography will ever sell in my
lifetime.
What's
it called again?
Don't sell yourself short. Do not sell yourself short.
So, that's the best-selling book in the history of the human race.
Harry Potter and the Golden Dildo. I'm just running that by you as a title. That's all I'm saying. You could catch this beast, man.
So, 50 Shades of Grey, roughly 100% of the readers are women.
Right.
Now, you'd think that a bunch of guys would read that and say, now, why are all these women reading it? But that hasn't happened.
More than half of Christian men admit to watching porn. A new study in the Barna Group shows that 64% of Christian men and 15% of Christian women admitted to viewing pornography at least once a month, compared to 65% of men and 30% of women who identified as non-Christian and said they watched porn at the same rate.
And a third of Christian clergy members admit to looking at porn. And in fact, there's a big concern now in the church that how are all these clergy who look at porn going to serve the needs of the parishioners who come to them saying, I'm a porn addict?
Mm-hmm.
They trade.
Yeah, they're understanding it.
Trade.
Trade DVDs, yeah, because we're back in the 90s.
Yeah. Yes.
But hang on. Listen, guys. I'm now going to appeal to your listener. Let's fundraise. Why isn't anybody doing Christian porn?
They are.
They are.
That is being done.
Full on. I mean, like, real Christian porn, not like making fun of Christians.
What do you mean?
Like, you know, Christ fills them. And it's all Christian imagery.
That's totally done.
That exists.
For Christians?
Yes. It exists.
Damn it.
Yeah. One of my favorites is the block.
How come I've never seen it? I run across everything. I've never run across that.
I'm sorry, Provence. We'll explain it to you during the break. You're listening to Ardent Atheist at ardentatheist.com and available at the iTunes Store. More after this insufferable disruption.
Good news, everyone.
That's right. Great news, in fact, old guy. We have a premium ad-free service. We give you the free hour of entertainment, but the premium service will allow you to subscribe to the full 90-minute show. It's only $10 per year. We also have another option. That's the Donate More If You Want button. Yes, Heather? All right. If you want to give us more money, we'll give away some subscriptions to the needy. So if you'd like to, we are behind, like we said at the top of the show.
Sigh.
I'm sorry. We are behind. We're trying to restructure the show, too. That's another thing. We're looking into doing a Patreon thing so that we can actually...
But that takes time, too.
Yeah, it does take time. We can actually get enough money to actually do a Patreon properly and do the show two times a month for Ardent Atheist and two times a month for Skeptically Yours. We are working on that. We're sorry to say we're behind. But how do crazy people go through the forest?
This was told last show.
That's all right. How do crazy people go through the forest?
We already did this.
How do crazy people go through the forest?
But I...
All right, I'm not going to tell the joke.
Foundation Beyond Belief is a community of compassionate humanists and atheists supporting outstanding charities worldwide. Members sign up for automatic donations starting at $5 a month, then distribute those funds however they wish among the featured charities. To date, this unique humanist organization has raised over $750,000 to make this world a better, more humane place. We don't look to the skies for a better world. Foundation Beyond Belief is humanity at work. Learn more or join us at foundationbeyondbelief.org.
And now back to Ardent Atheist Nonsense You Can Believe In. We're talking with Buck Bowen and Dr. Marty Klein, as well as Paul Provenza. Thanks for being here, everybody.
I'm looking it up. Christian porn exists. And
it does.
There's articles on it.
Now, Michael, I want you to know you have a mic right there next to you. No. Michael Caine said something when we were at the break, and we were deriding Provenza for not knowing about Christian porn, because that happened. Michael, what'd you say?
I actually went in and did almost 2 years of sex therapy, sex addiction therapy. And so you brought up the Patrick Carnes stuff, and that was something I just kind of wanted to comment on, was that we throw thousands of dollars at that, and it's, 3 days a week kind of therapy. There's intensive outpatient programs for it. I mean, they treat it as almost like a heroin addiction. You end up in the same sort of scenarios as those people, and it does absolutely no good and just makes you feel like a shitty human being.
Is there a religious component to this, like in the way there is for AA?
They have an SAA, and they have like SA, the Sexaholics Anonymous, and a couple of different versions of them. Some of them are a little more hardcore than other ones. And
ironically.
Yeah, right. But yeah, they've got the higher power stuff. They've got the steps. I mean, the whole thing.
Wow.
But those meetings are a great place to get money.
And why?
Absolutely.
Why did you go do this? Was it to
save a marriage.
Yeah, I was married.
Did you save it?
No, it wasn't even his own marriage.
No, I was not.
What are you doing, Buck?
I'm trying to get...
It's not working.
He's getting me airtime.
It's not working. No. He's trying to put him into the camera.
Oh, I see. Well.
So if we use that camera there, this camera here, then
that's funny.
Then he could flash it in.
You guys are weird.
He's trying to put him on the show.
I have patients come to me. This is no joke. I have patients come to me and say, listen, doc, you have to diagnose me as a sex addict or a porn addict, because my wife says if I'm a sex addict or a porn addict, then I have a medical problem and she'll stick with me no matter what. But if I don't have an addiction, then I'm just a selfish bastard and she wants a divorce.
Yeah, that was pretty much the situation. What? It was you know, yeah. Hey, this, you're using this because you don't love me, or it belittles me, or
that's just a relationship manipulation tactic. That's
yes,
what it is.
Of course.
From both
yes,
directions.
Right. So actually, if you go to Wikipedia, I'm not recommending you do that, but if you go to Wikipedia and you look up sex addiction,
yeah.
Here's a really cool thing that somebody told me about. I'm listed as the foremost critic in the United States of the sex addiction model.
Nice.
Isn't that excellent?
Woo!
Nice.
Yeah.
That's I'm right behind
so
you.
I have accomplished one thing.
So I constantly have come across a number of times these, you know, lists of warning signs where you might be a sex addict.
Yes. Yes.
It's like a Jeff Foxworthy pervert.
I'm glad
act.
You brought this up.
You might be a sex addict if.
Right.
So how do you know that you're not a sex addict?
Well, the same way that you know that you're not possessed by the devil. If someone comes to me and says, am I possessed by the devil? I say, good news. You're not.
Okay, but I get your point. But you see, what I'm saying is, what are the things...
Well, if you go to the... If you go to the internet and you look up the sexual addiction screening test, it's a 25-question screening test.
Mm.
And it measures... The questions on it include questions like... have you ever felt guilty about your sexual decisions? Have you ever been secretive about your sexual activity? Have you ever done anything sexually that you feel ashamed of? So these are supposedly markers for sex addiction, but what they really are is markers for growing up in America.
I was just going to say, basically it's my teenage years.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Have you ever borrowed money for porn? Have you ever been late to work or missed work because of porn?
People still pay for porn?
So,
sure do.
So
yeah, right?
They adopted the SAST, the Sexual Addiction Screening Test. And by the way, whenever I train therapists, I urge every single one of them to take this test because I want everybody to know exactly what the test involves and see how ordinary people who grow up in America, they start out 15 out of 25, you know, without even breaking a sweat. That just got adopted for porn. So now it's the porn addiction screening test. And it's things like, have you ever used porn when your partner wanted to have sex with you? Or have you ever used porn when you're in a relationship where sex is available to you? Or have you ever been late for anything or missed any deadlines because you're using porn? So again, these kinds of questions... They just measure what is it like to be a grown-up in America today.
Right.
Have you ever been secretive about porn? Who isn't secretive about porn, other than the people at this table? Who isn't secretive about it? Everybody's secretive about it because the instruction is you better not be looking at porn.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And that's just an instruction of you better keep it a secret.
I went into the Mac store to get my phone fixed, and they had to go into my browser. And on the browser was porn. And I was like, that damn Emery looking at porn on my – it wasn't me. And when she's like, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. And you were in it.
That was the worst part.
Yeah. Are we ever going to solve this fucking problem? I mean, I'm sick of the government.
Well, which problem? Which
okay.
Problem?
I'm sick of the government trying to protect us by taking away our freedoms.
You can't
blame
That's
why you vote for Trump.
You can't blame
Is it?
You can't blame the government for this because that's what people are demanding. Look, people are demanding that their health care be taken away from them.
Right.
So you can't blame the government for trying to do what the people want. And it's the same thing with porn. There are tens of millions of parents and tens of millions of wives and girlfriends who want something done to limit the availability of porn for the people that they care about. And the government's only responding to that. You know, the government couldn't get away with taking away everybody's Toyota because, you know, people don't want their Toyotas taken away. But there's a lot of people in the United States who believe that porn is really the problem when, as I say in my new book, where the subtitle is Confronting America's Porn Panic with Honest Talk About Sex, there's a lot of couples where the sex has collapsed. A lot of couples who have been together for 9 years,
right,
and they have no sex anymore. They have sex once every 5 weeks, and it's not terribly interesting. And most couples would rather chew glass than talk honestly to each other about what happened to our sex life. And it's so much easier to fight about porn than it is to talk honestly with your husband or wife about sex. And so as long as people are so frightened to talk to each other about whatever happened to our sex life, they're going to fight about something else instead. And the thing that they're going to fight about nowadays is porn.
Well, they're going to take away this man's Toyota, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, what's happening?
So there's a guy actually fucking a car. He's actually putting his penis in the... he just got caught by the camera. He's walking
away. See that? What was the sticker? Baby on board?
I got a quick question for you. What would the U.S. look like without porn, or if porn was banned?
Well, those are two different questions, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
If porn were banned, everybody would be watching porn. But so that's a different question. Okay.
So the winner in banning porn would be the porn industry.
That's what happened with drugs. Marijuana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happened with alcohol.
Yeah.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
But a country without porn, I mean, that's an interesting question. There's a lot of people who would never have watched porn growing up. And if you don't watch porn growing up, you kind of don't miss it as an adult. If you have lots of people who are just masturbating without porn, I don't think there would be much difference. But there are things that people are learning from porn that are not so bad, like the fact that the clitoris exists. You know, there's a lot of people who wouldn't know that there's such a thing as a clitoris if they didn't look at porn. Yeah.
Also, I think the spectrum of sexuality.
Uh-huh.
I think that, you know, you can see such a cross-section of the world there.
Right.
And I think that a lot of people are sort of like, oh, my God, I thought it was just me.
Right.
And so
normalizing what's common and normal.
Right. So that can be a good thing, you know, that people look at, say, a guy going down on a woman and saying, wow, I thought I was the only one. And so that's really great that people can see that they're not the only one. On the other hand, if you get people who are unprepared, like, 14-year-olds, mm-hmm. and they look at this incredibly wide range of stuff, it can be pretty overwhelming.
Yeah.
That can be pretty overwhelming, especially when it looks like people are getting hurt.
Yeah.
When it looks like
BDSM. And,
yeah. Because kids don't understand that sometimes adults play sex games.
Right.
And now it would be great if kids knew that. And the way to know that would be if your parents told you.
Right.
And there's nothing inherently wrong with parents telling kids, oh, by the way, you know, kids play games, adults play games too.
Yeah.
One of the things that adults play games with is sex.
Right.
You know, talk to me again when you're 35, you know, and I'll fill you in.
So that's why daddy gets a boner when he whips me. That has nothing to
talk
do with it.
Talk real slow.
Yeah, there are a lot of things in porn that are. I think everything that I've seen in porn, by and large, is not abhorrent. I mean, most of what's happening in porn is like BDSM is thought of as abhorrent, and rape fantasies is thought of as abhorrent. And
by some
fetishes.
People.
By some,
fetishes.
Right, and
yeah.
Fetishes and things like that. Stepping on a guy's balls and those kinds of weird things, right?
Feet.
And one of the things, like we were talking about misinforming children about what sex actually is and can be, mm-hmm. but I think it can also, as Provenza was, I think, pointing out, it can make people understand that the interests that they're wired for are not abhorrent. They are things that they can safely and intelligently take part in.
Right. And it's so curious to me that some anti-porn activists like Gail Dines or Melissa Farley or John Stoltenberg going around about how all of porn is brutal and violent and all of porn shows the degradation of women and just the scathing, horrifying torture. The truth is, yeah, you can find that pornography on the internet, but it's a very tiny slice.
Right.
It's a very tiny slice of all the porn out there for a very simple reason. Most people don't want to look at horrifying brutality porn.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, when activists like Gail Dines says, you know, all this porn, you know, is brutal and horrifyingly violent, I think to myself, well, you know, who do you think is watching that? Whose husband? Whose boyfriend? Whose son? Whose brother, whose father do you, Gail Dines, think is watching all of this, jillions and jillions of porn films that are uniformly brutal and violent? So the truth is, whether it's good news or not, the truth is that the overwhelming majority of porn shows happy, smiling people doing the kinds of things that, you know, married couples do before they get married.
Right, right. That is most of what's out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Sadly. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to Ardent Atheist at ardentatheist.com and available at the iTunes store. More after this intolerable intermission. And now, a special announcement.
This is a big super shout-out to a few of our listeners. Six Ball, Booger Bender. Hi, Booger.
Hi, Booger.
Dixie Normus.
They're doing porn names up on the wall.
Kyle Delaney, Bud Light, Trevor, Sheila, Roger, Sean, Sounder, Fagboy, Brad, Member Barry.
Oh, nice.
Mighty Mike T, Your Ghost Rider, and Joe Swam. These were some of the people chatting on the Wall of Reason. Thank you for being there, everybody.
Back to Ardent Atheist, Nonsense You Can Believe In. We're talking with Buck Bowen, Dr. Marty Klein, and Dr. Paul Prevenza. That would be weird.
I played one on TV.
You have played a doctor on TV.
So here's the question. What's it like in the rest of the world? I mean, obviously we know there are some theocratic countries where it's a big issue, and I know the UK is clamping down.
Muslim nations?
Yeah. Well, what's it like in the rest of the world? And from a cultural standpoint, is there any place where porn is accepted?
Well, it's accepted more in the Netherlands, and it's accepted very well in Germany.
Oh yeah, they have
and they got
they
some
have,
nasty porn there. Yeah,
they have legal. They have legal sex workers there.
They have legal sex workers there too. Yeah. In a lot of countries, there's not a lot of porn, partly because people don't have a lot of privacy. So we tend to forget that most people around the world, they never have 5 minutes by themselves, ever.
That's true. The whole,
not
the
even
whole
when they're sleeping.
In a couple of rooms.
That's right. Yeah. You have the whole family sleeping in the same room. Most people around the world don't have sex in a room alone with just them and their partner.
That's kind of hot.
Most people, well, take my mother-in-law, please.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of countries where there just isn't a lot of time devoted to sexual expression, either because it's clamped down by cultural norms, like in Saudi Arabia, let's say, or because people don't have the privacy.
What about in the West?
In the West, it's fairly consistent that there's a lot of, I mean, France, Germany, Italy, people look at porn. Now,
I mean, there doesn't seem to be any public policy issues around it, does there? Which is why the UK thing is a little surprising.
Well, one of the things about the US, let's remember that everybody's got access to porn 24 hours a day with their cell phone and on their desk. That's not necessarily the case in every other country, not even every other Western country. And people are catching up pretty quickly. 5 years ago, smartphone penetration in Italy, for example, very low. Yeah.
Good choice of words.
Thank you so much.
You know, he wrote a book about this.
Thank you.
He knows
so
what
much.
He's doing.
So there's also, in a lot of places in the West, people can be sexual without guilt and without making a big fuss about it easier than in the U.S. So I think there's probably less porn watching going on in some places because there's more sex happening.
In Europe, though, isn't there a marked difference in terms of the culture that has a lot to do with the fact that the education of kids is very...
I'm sorry.
In Scandinavia,
don't show that.
Every 11-year-old is getting comprehensive sex education in Denmark and in Sweden and in,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, dinner table talk among families in Holland is frequently about sex for children. 12-year-olds.
That's great.
Not sex for children, sexual conversation
for
children.
On behalf of the children's needs to talk about these things.
Yeah, and there's a lot of countries in Western Europe where people assume that kids are going to be sexual before they get married. Here in the U.S., it's still, we suppose it's going to happen, but we wish it would.
I got a question for you. Maybe you address this in your book. Do you think the reason that parents don't talk to their children about it is because they think that it'll pique their interest and then they'll just want to go out and do it?
That is absolutely one of the reasons that parents give for, not only do I not want to talk to my kids about sex, I don't want school sex education either.
Okay.
Because kids won't think about sex unless we raise the topic with them, which right. of course is kind of silly.
That's right. Bullshit.
But I prefer the word silly, actually. Parents, it goes down easy with parents.
Oh.
But
which ironically is bullshit.
But it's true. A lot of parents are concerned that if now you may remember this HPV vaccine, Gardasil, which came out a few years ago. People in the religious right, they were almost uniformly against this medication. You give this medicine to kids before they become sexually active, like when they're 10 or 11 or 12, let's say, before they've had partner sex, and it protects them against cervical cancer, against HPV, which can lead to cervical cancer.
Right.
So a lot of people in the religious right, I actually talked about this in my book, America's War on Sex, a few years ago. They were saying, we don't want to make sex safer for kids because they might then go out and do it more.
That is the dumbest logic, lack of logic. That's the most, that's shit in the mouth. That is stupid. There's nothing about, you can inoculate a five-year-old and never tell them they were inoculated for it. Why would you tell them? You don't have to. You're an idiot for saying that. Anyone who thinks that way is a fucking idiot.
Yeah, like I said, Heather, we prefer silly.
Why are you looking at me? I didn't say it.
You're right.
That's retarded.
You're right, Emery, in the following way. Most 12-year-olds, when they're making the decision whether or not to have sex, they don't stop and think, well, gee, I could get a disease and it could make me infertile in 10 years.
Right.
They don't even stop to think I could get pregnant.
Right, right. So the people on the right who want to make policy about sexuality, they seem really out of touch with the way that normal sex works with everyday people.
I doubt you know the answer to this, but how does someone who grew up in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and then had some kids think that way? They fucked when they were kids. They were doing the same things that they're worried their kids are doing. And I see it all over the place. But I don't understand it. I mean, they were there once. They know that logic doesn't work.
And what they say is, I barely escaped that situation intact, and I don't want my kids to have to navigate that possibly damaging situation.
My God, that's stupid.
But that's what bizarre. They say.
And they're just making it worse.
That's what they, and they are just making it worse. That's the saddest thing about this. Mm-hmm. If you wanted a public policy that was designed to increase teen pregnancy, to increase the lack of communication between teenagers about sexuality, it would be the American policy.
Yeah. But this all comes from religion.
That part pretty much comes from religion.
Right.
Although,
I mean, all of this is because it all is predicated upon sex being shameful.
Well, you're not going to get me saying anything positive about religion here, so don't worry about that. But the truth is that there are different constituencies, whether they're people who are like the whole consent thing now. There's this whole big thing about consent. Completely misplaced, thank you very much, but there is a big thing about consent. Talking about consent without talking about pleasure can't possibly work, but people are trying to do that. Okay, the consent thing now is not being driven just by religious people. It's being driven by well-meaning progressives as well.
It's the same thing you were talking about earlier.
It's like hate speech, you know. Yeah. It's that same thing. Mm-hmm. The problem with trying to regulate hate speech, people who are driving that, they're not just religious people. There's a lot of progressives who believe that we need to limit what people are allowed to say to protect the delicate feelings of various people.
I don't see that having a positive effect. I think the only thing that's going to solve this is talking to your children, and not just about sex, but about how to interact with people of the opposite sex or of the same sex if they happen to be gay. It's so important. We never tell our children. We don't tell boys and we don't tell girls this. We never say to them, you don't have the right to do something to someone, and you have the right to say don't do. My mom said to me one day, I was telling her about a sexual encounter I had, and in the middle of it, my partner said, she put her hand on my chest and said, we need to stop. And I stopped, and I was talking to her about this thing that happened. And she said, how the hell did you do that? My mom believed I didn't have the physical capability of stopping in the middle of sex and pulling my penis out of that girl. Mm-hmm. She thought that was what she couldn't believe I was capable of it. And this continues to be a pervasive way of thinking in our society, in parents and older people. I don't understand why they're not telling. This all stops when people say to the kids, no, you don't have the right to keep doing anything the second your partner says stop. This is never said, ever, from parents to kids. It makes me crazy, and it needs to be said in spades. It needs to be said over and over and over again.
Who could disagree with that?
How do we get it? How do we get them to do it?
I just have to say that Emery's relationship with his daughter in this regard is absolutely brilliant. They're so upfront with each other about
That's
everything.
Great.
And yeah,
That's
and it's Emery's, he really has the right to rant and spew the way he just did.
He's walking his talk.
Yeah, because he's walking his walk. Yeah.
Yeah. She asked me about anal sex. I told her how to do it.
You showed her?
The question is not how to do it.
The question is why to do it.
Yeah, well, that was discussed as well. She tried it. She found out that it wasn't for her. Mm-hmm. But she tried it, and she tried it smartly, intelligently, and carefully. You know
she
what I mean?
She used a strap-on?
I think I've already gone too far with her privacy.
Well, there is this exceptionalism around sexuality in America in particular, although Western culture for the most part. The idea that we need to treat sex differently than we treat everything else,
mm-hmm.
which means that people are trying to establish a certain set of rules for their kids around sex or for each other around sex instead of just saying, well, if you have good ways of making decisions, do that with sex. If you have good ways to communicate, do that with sex. Unfortunately, in America, people think we need special sexual morality or sexual ethics, different sexual decision-making, and that's because sex is somehow special. When I train therapists about how to do sex therapy, I tell them, I'm not going to tell you anything special about sex, which is not entirely true, but I say, I'm not going to tell you anything special about sex. What I'm going to tell you about is how to do good therapy that you already know how to do and ignore sex when we are talking about sex.
Right.
I see.
It's all the same. Just why is it any different just in this particular
Right,
center?
Right.
Well, is that true, though? Is that true in that because of our culture and because of our history around this, that people are kind of off balance about sex?
Well,
and
that's true.
And doesn't that sort of put a frame around it? It's like, oh, you're going down that territory. You have to know these basic things about how people get off balance about this.
Well, I think in general, if you want to get along with people and if you want to have a successful relationship, you need to understand how people get off balance, period. And you need to understand how can you tell when somebody seems to be a little off balance and what should you do about it?
I get off balance when somebody doesn't want to give their kid a goddamn inoculation against something that'll give them cancer. All right, that's it for the 3 hour, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to talk more about this getting off balance when we come back to the premium portion of the show. This has been the free version of episode 198, another show that went off without a hitch. We miss you, Hitch. We'll be making the full 90 minutes available to our premium subscribers very soon. I want to thank our guests, Buck Bowen, Dr. Marty Klein, and PhD Paul Provenza. I also want to thank my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson, and our video switcher, Michael Caine. You can call him Mike if you're uncomfortable with that. Tune in next time when our guest will be...
We don't know.
And we'll be talking about...
Are you hearing me?
I'm listening. I'm your host, Emery Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson. Our theme music, courtesy of the sound editor of The Aristocrats, Eric Wilson. And special thanks to our Wall of Reason moderator, Joseph Sexy Boy Swam.
Where can people find Paul Provenza, man? We got a Twitter. What's the story?
Up your ass.
There you go. If you want to find Paul Provenza, www.emerysass.com. What's your Twitter account?
At Paul Provenza.
It's easy. Where's your Twitter, Ben? Buck?
Buck, John?
Truth Buck. Before Comfort with a B and a number four.
Where can they get your fine... where can they hear this book you wrote?
HisPornHerPain.com.
There you go.
Awesome. It's really, really... It's really compelling. It's
absolutely. Great. Thank you very much. Hang around. If you're watching on the wall, you get to watch the premium portion gratis. Some characters mentioned on this podcast are completely fictitious. Any resemblance to real persons living or dead is purely wishful thinking. You've been listening to Ardent Atheist. Ardent Atheist is a product of natural selection.